Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the center. As you know, we have the blessed visit of Swami Yogacananda. I will introduce him in a few moments. I have a couple of other announcements. This is a message from Swami Sarvadevanandaji, who, as you all may know or may not know, is the head minister here. I serve as the resident minister. And if he doesn't live here, he is the head minister of this center. This is a message from him. Dear all, my loving greetings and best wishes to you all. Following the inspiration and footsteps of revered Swami Swapanandaji Maharaj, we invite and encourage devotees everywhere to pledge for extra Jai Sri Durga Japam during this coming auspicious Navaratri to Vijayadashmi. This year, our days for chanting are from Tuesday, October 9th to Friday, October 19th. As you may know, we have done this for many years to the great benefit of our entire spiritual community. The idea is to pledge a certain amount of japam, repetition of a mantra, for each day above one's regular need. This has at least two benefits. First, it helps to stretch ourselves to have a greater capacity for spiritual practice. Second, the spiritual energy produced and the merit that it brings for each 100,000 repetitions is equal to one grand Durga Puja performance. It is best to be constant, to do japa every day as far as possible, yet if one gets behind the number pledged on one day, one can make up the difference the next day or the next. Counting may be done using a rosary or by a tally counter, or you can simply observe how long it takes to do 1,000 repetitions. Thereby, one does not have to focus on the counting, but can know the number by watching the time only. Please email Brother Shankara, letting him know your pledge for this year's chanting. You can tell him your daily pledge or your total commitment for October 9th to October 19th. Send your email to shankara@vedantaatlanta.org. You don't need to trouble yourself to remember that. Just go on the website, and it says click here to send me an email. Please note that the time for the Sandhi Puja this year is on Wednesday, October 17th, from 12:26 p.m. to 1:14 p.m. This is the very auspicious time when Divine Mother killed the Mahisasura, great demon. It brings Mother's blessings when one chants her name, Jai Sri Durga, at that time. Every year we assemble in the temple of Hollywood, Santa Barbara, and other places during that time and jointly chant. Sandhi Puja also will be observed at your center in Tucker. Group chanting will be done in the chapel during this very auspicious time, or you can participate by chanting at home on that Wednesday. So that is the message from Swami Sarvadevananda. Please do email me if you pledge to chant Jai Sri Durga during that time, October 9th to October 19th, because I do report to the Swami what the pledges are, and then at the end I will contact you to see how much was fulfilled, or if you move over your pledge, and that too may be reported in this one. Just a couple of other announcements. As you may have noticed, there's a box out in the foyer. It says Atlanta Community Food Bank. This is part of our Holy Mother's Helping Hands drive, food drive, and clothing drive for the less fortunate as winter comes on. We're 1 month into the drive. It will go through December 31st, and I'm very pleased to see that the boxes are filling up. There's no need for you to remember all of this. Each week, the details will be in your e-news and on the website and on the Facebook page. There are also flyers by the box out in the foyer. And there's also a clothes rack in the sun porch of the monastery to hang clothes that you bring that need hanging. Otherwise, you can simply put shirts and sweaters on the table in the center. As we know, we have Swami Vivekananda this evening speaking on Thomas Akempis's The Imitation of Christ. He will also be in the chair tomorrow evening at 7 to continue with part 2 of that talk. And then there will be a potluck supper in the monastery after tomorrow evening's talk. Just one other note, on Friday the 13th, we'll have Seva Saturday on October 13th, we'll have Seva Saturday for October. Please join us for this service to your spiritual community. For those of you who are here at noon, we serve a delicious lunch. So, with that, thank you for your attention. I will say a few words about my dear friend, Swami Vivekananda. He's president of the Vedanta Society of Providence, Rhode Island. And the Swami was born in 1953 in Karnataka, India. Swami Vivekananda joined the Ramakrishna Order in 1976 and received his monastic vows, his final vows, in 1986. After being at Ramakrishna Math Center at Nagpur, India for 20 years, he was posted as the head of Ramakrishna Mission Shillong in India. He came to the United States in the summer of 2001 as the minister of the Vedanta Society of Providence. His present responsibilities as president include conducting Sunday services, weekly study classes, and organizing spiritual retreats. He is also invited to preach Vedanta at various places in the United States, including, blessedly, at least once a year here. Swami Vivekananda is the Hindu religious affiliate at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, and the Hindu chaplain at the University of Massachusetts in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. So, with that formality, let me just say a few words about how fortunate we are to have the Swami come and visit with us. He was just in Augusta since yesterday morning. Rode there with some devotees and was at the Hindu temple of Augusta. He comes there and here at least once a year. Blessedly, he will return again with us in December.
Oh, probably I will have to sell that plan.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I'm very sorry. Well, we'll postpone it. We won't. We'll shelve that plan. We'll come up with another.
Thank you.
With that, I regretfully say we'll just see Swami just tonight and tomorrow night this year. But that will be plenty, as you'll see. Maharaj, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Shankara, for this lovely and loving welcome. It is always a joy to meet and speak to the devotees, to the ardent spiritual practitioners, those who want to realize in this life the goal and thus make life really successful. And we gain from each other's company, each other's holy vibes, and enrich ourselves through that. So today I took for discussion a very well-known text which has been very beneficial to me personally, and to many, many great, many souls, including great Swami Vivekananda. So, let me begin with prayers. Om Vang Me Manasi Pratishthita Mano Me Vachi Pratishthitam आविराविर्महेधि वेदस्य महानीस्थ श्रुतं मे मा प्रहासीः अनेनाधीते नाहोरात्रान् सन्दधामि ऋतं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्मामवतु तद्वक्तारमवतु अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारमवतु वक्तारम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. May my speech be firmly established in my mind. May the mind too be firmly established in my speech. May there be perfect correspondence between my thoughts, words, and actions. May the truths of the scriptures come to me, revealing the self-effulgent Lord. May not what I learn from them forsake me. Let me live my life day and night according to the teachings of the scriptures. I shall speak what is appropriate. I shall speak the truth. May that protect me. May that protect the teacher. Om, peace, peace, peace. Dear Brother Shankara and Rajarshi and all, our Patrick told me that his name, he was calling himself that Rishi, a very beautiful word. But then another Swami, Swami Tattvamayananda, is it? Yeah, not just Rishi, you be Rajarshi. Rajarshi means the king as well as Rishi, sage. So, I don't want to elaborate more on that. That's not the topic today. and all dear friends, this book that we have taken for discussion today is second most important book in the Christian theological books, second next only to Bible. It is so important a text. Although in the course of years, as the institutionalized religions, they focus more on political things and getting money and business and so forth, such books take a back seat, you see. It is therefore important for spiritual seekers. Especially, this book is very important for monastics. But monastic doesn't mean somebody who puts on some special kind of attire or has some very funny sounding name. It is the monastic means, you know, the one who has taken up this spiritual life very seriously and has made this goal, God realization, as the goal of life. And therefore, for that purpose, has shunned other pursuits which are common to those who take up God realization only as a secondary pursuit. That, okay, I would like to realize God in my life, but that can wait, you know. First, let me get all other things done. let me find lot of money, let me find the right spouse for me, and let me have a good family around. All these things, when completed, then I will have enough leisure, and then I can devote myself to the, say, that pursuit of this goal of God realization single-mindedly. It hardly ever happens like that, because the responsibilities and the desires that one has, they don't dwindle, they go on flaring up further and further. And therefore, this ideal keeps on getting pushed. Oh yes, that is in the back of my mind. Such people would say that, yes, that is in the back of my mind. I think, yes, that's the goal of life. I believe the sages, and as a follower of Sri Ramakrishna, I believe that God realization is the goal of life. But that is the final goal. I have some other goals to fulfill first. It is. So, this book is actually, it rekindles in us that, yes, what is the purpose of other things in life? Will they bring us close to satisfaction? Will they open up the mine of bliss for us? And the answer would come, no. It is. That is the goal of life, because that is what is going to give us what we are actually seeking in life. Other things will not be able to do that. So, when one sees this fact, then single-mindedly tries to pursue that goal, and this book provides such wonderful guidance for that. It is imitation of Christ. And let us understand these words. But before that, let us take a look, a quick look, on the life that Thomas A. Kempis led. Just a few details about him. He was born sometimes in 1379 or 1380, and passed away in 1471. It is, so he lived 90 plus years, had a long life, and in that he left home and heart at the age of 12 and pursued the path of spiritual, you know, learning and enlightenment. He was part of various different monasteries. He was born in a town in Germany, close to the border of Holland, but spent most of his years in monasteries, the brotherhoods in Holland. So it is the small town in Germany near Köln. That is how he got the name Thomas of Kempis. Kempen is that town. So this book is so inspirational, and also provides so much guidance in our day-to-day practical spiritual life, that Swami Vivekananda kept a copy of this book with him throughout his journeys, and he kept very little belonging with him as he was moving to all different places, mostly on foot. He could not afford to carry a huge luggage with him. So, amongst books, he had only two books with him. And this was one of them. Imagine, you know, how much importance he gave to this book, the other being Bhagavad Gita. So, there is a very nice discussion that you find in his many new discoveries about his life when he was touring Gujarat, that he met one big scholar and he was writing some treatises on Shankara, the great scholar Shankaracharya. So, and when he saw Swami Vivekananda carrying this book, he was surprised that such a Hindu monk carrying this Christian text. So he questioned him, not irreverentially, but, well, what is the purpose? And Swami Vivekananda told him this, that you read this book and you will see how valuable it is. Swami Vivekananda gave a very eloquent, powerful summary of the teachings of this. And then as it happened, that Swami Vivekananda later on translated this book. That Gujarati gentleman, he also translated this book after hearing from Vivekananda. And not only that he translated, being a scholar of Indian scriptures, Hindu scriptures, he put the corresponding passages from the Hindu text there. And so it is a very valuable book. That same thing Swami Vivekananda, when he translated, he could not complete the translation in his lifetime. But he also presented the corroborating verses, corroborating texts from Vedantic treatises under these. So he translated it originally in Bengali, not fully, he could not, as I mentioned, but its English translation is also available in complete works. So you see, he mentions certain verses from Bhagavad Gita, some statements from Upanishads and so forth under these teachings in this wonderful, wonderful book. And it begins, I will just read a little bit and let us try to fathom a few points in that. But even the reading it and trying to absorb these words, you will see gradually each of those words, it kind of opens a lot of possibilities of learning from that word. These words, they are expressions of the divine realization that Thomas had. And so all that wisdom is contained in those words. So although the words are small, the wisdom that these words embrace is really very big. So we can keep on meditating on those words. So now comes this part, you know, imitation. What is this imitation? Imitation, sometimes in the modern language, the word imitation gives a somewhat derogatory connotation. It is not real, it is imitation. That is how, you know, oh, this jewelry is an imitation jewelry, means not real jewelry. It is not made of really any precious metal. It is just some polish, gold polish has been put on, aluminium or something. So it is. So imitation, it is. It doesn't carry the that kind of idea that with which this word is used here. Imitation means following, that following the ideal, following the footsteps. So, follow the footsteps of whom? Christ. Christ. And what is Christ? Christ is sometimes confused only as Jesus. Jesus was one of the Christ. Christ is a concept. Christ is the divinity appearing in human form, something that we can perceive, we can understand, we can absorb. So, what is it? It is, that is how we can learn. As Jesus mentions, that I am the goal, I am the way. So, he is going, imagine, you know, Jesus is going. And you are walking in the footsteps of Jesus. Now, where will you reach? If we are following in the footsteps of Jesus, where shall we reach? Where Jesus reaches. So that is how we should look at it. That these are the teachers of the world. They incarnations, that is the Hindu word for it, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that God assuming a human form to teach humanity. And humanity learns from other human beings. You can see that in our schools and all, only human beings are allowed to apply as teachers in the school, isn't it? You don't see that the head of the school is some cat. No, you can't imagine, you know. It is. So human beings can learn basically from other human beings. So to give the education in terms of, you know, education and training about religious ideals and following that religion in one's life, that God also therefore has to come in human form. That is God. The appearance is that of a human being. In content, in essence, nothing of the Godhood has been lost. It is not easy for many of us to appreciate this because we have an intellectual concept about God, all-pervading, being all-powerful, can do anything, can do a magic whereby I will hit a big jackpot and so forth. You know? That is our idea of God. That yes, that all-pervading and all-powerful, that being, how can that being be confined to just these 3 cubits of human body? It is impossible, it is illogical. And so many, even amongst the certain group of Vedantins, feel that in incarnating, the God loses some of the divinity. It is some divinity is kind of brushed aside to make that God into a human being. But that is actually not the case. God in human form without losing any of the divinity. And no loss of divinity there. Only the form is that of human. It is like water. you condense it, put it in refrigerator, in the freezer, and then you have that some grating there put in, and so the cubes come out, ice cubes. You all might have done it here, isn't it? In the freezer, you pour water and then you get ice cubes. Now, ice cube has a form, particular size, particular form. The water doesn't have it. But in assuming that form of ice, has water lost anything of its waterhood? I don't know if that is a word, but you can understand what it means. Waterhood or waterness. Nothing of the waterness is lost, and yet now you have the ice there. There is a form. It is actually an addition, not a subtraction. And nothing of the water has been taken out, but size has been added to it, shape has been added to it. So that is how human beings, I cannot resist the temptation of retelling you. I know I had told here that incident earlier too, that one little girl asked me, pointing to the picture of Sri Ramakrishna, that is he a man or is he God? Now, that 7-8 year old girl, maybe younger, she is asking this very difficult question. Many philosophical minds, highly educated people will feel confused. And now how to reply? And there were, you know, in the chapel, there were all the wooden chairs there. So I asked that girl a counter question. Tell me, is this chair or is this wood? Wow. Is this chair or is this wood? Wow. And then that little girl replied, intelligent girl, you know, yes, understood. 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 It is both. It is wood in its, you know, properties. It is wood. But it has a functional, it has a shape. It has a function. Looking at that, it is called a chair. Now it has a shape. Nothing of its woodness has been removed in that process. Even now, if you put fire to it, it will burn like wood. But now it has been assigned a particular usage. You can sit on it. So it is, that is how God assuming human form, that is Christ or incarnation of God. God, without losing any of that godness, appears now amongst us as human being. Yesterday there was this interfaith conference, and then Unitarian minister, she was talking to me, asking, well, which of the Hindus you have so many different godheads? So, which godhead do you like most? Then I explained, you know, that Hindus, we have three categories of godhead. That divine absolute, we cannot comprehend that. We cannot think about that. It is impossible. We cannot really make an image of that, likeness of that. That is why that is the commandment in Bible, that do not make a likeness. There is a purpose behind that commandment. that do not think that something that you make is God. It is, in that sense, it is right. But as soon as you think about that, you make a concept. Our thinking itself is making an image of God. And that is how we think they are the symbols of that divine. We assign a symbol. Human beings think in symbols. And the symbols have, that it is a very different topic, very interesting. Symbols have some are natural symbols. Something, you know, that automatically reminds you of something. It is, and some are just arbitrarily chosen symbols. There is nothing that is particularly natural or connecting the symbol with the symbolized in a natural way. Just to give you an example, that all over the world you will see that the street lights, red means what? Stop. Green means go. Now, can it be reversed or not? Well, logically, there is nothing against it. Let. Red means go. And green means stop. But that will not happen because the color red has something in our mind. Oh, wait, stop. It is the color of the blood or whatever it may be. Therefore, universally you will see that when you see red, means stop. That is why some statistics shows that if you are driving a red car, be careful. Because more red cars get tickets than the other color cars. Not that if you are driving carefully and within speed limits and obeying all the rules, but you know, so many cars, they just flout the rules, especially of speed, and not all get ticketed, all do not get that. But then, red, because it attracts attention. It is. That is how you know that gets spotted. And so, hey, here is my prey. The police officer sees and chases and gets it. Yes. So you can't argue that, well, so many others were also speeding. Why you did not catch them? And why did you catch me? The police officer told one such questioner that, you see, you go fishing. You don't catch all the fish. There is a lot of fish in the pond. But does it mean that you don't catch any? Yeah, you catch whatever you get, you see. So, it is. So, red has that quality, that internal connection is there between the symbol and the symbolized. That is one way. You know, naturally your mind gets an idea. Therefore, whenever it is a danger is to be described, you see, we have the alerts, different color codes for different alerts. Red alert is the highest, you know. It's a red alert. The security arrangements have been enhanced. There is the orange alerts and whatever. Yeah, so it is the red alert. Red has that connection with human mind. So it becomes a natural symbol for something that is dangerous, something that is, you know, in our language also, you see, if that person sees a danger, it is in literature, it is said, this fellow saw red there. It is, that is a natural symbol. And then there are some arbitrary symbols that we use in, say, in algebra, that, okay, assume this to be X. Now, instead of X, you use Y, Z, whatever, it doesn't matter. And they are, you know, used like that, arbitrary. There is no really connection between the symbol and the symbolized. So, This is one aspect that we approach, the Hindus approach the divine through symbols. And every religion has symbols. Like the Christians, they have the symbol of cross. It is wrong to say that it was the symbol that was devised in Christianity. It had a much longer history. The cross has a longer history than the history of Christianity. So whatever it may, but that is a symbol. It is, many other symbols you see are being used. So I told that there are some symbols like that, that the Hindus worship. For example, this symbol, that sound symbol or the letter Om, that is a very pervasive symbol. It is not a particular deity, but it is a symbol through which you connect to God. These are many symbols. There are, you know, chakras. That they use, you know, mandalas and chakras that Hindus and Buddhists use. They are symbols of various aspects of divinity. So that is one way the Hindus, they have their deities represented. Then there is the second category. Like you have Shiva, you have here a picture, this beautiful statue of Nataraja, that iron, cast iron frame there. It is Nataraja. It is Shiva in the form, a dancing Shiva who is half man, half woman. It is Nataraja. Now that is the symbol, but has some human characteristics. It is not human exactly. You have these concepts, Shiva, Vishnu, Ganesha. They are not human beings. They have human features. Durga, Kali, they are not human beings. They were not born and grew or got educated, nothing like that. They are eternal. Therefore, there is a very nice story that when Shiva and Parvati were getting married, there was a wedding ceremony. Lord Shiva and Parvati were getting married. And before the first ceremony in wedding is to worship Ganesha. In every auspicious this thing, Ganesha is to be worshipped first. Now, as the legend goes, that Ganesha is the son of Shiva and Parvati, how could they at their wedding ceremony worship Ganesha? So Tulsidas, in describing this event, therefore says, hey, just remember, all of them, they have no birth really, they are symbolic. So it is, they have been associated with human features so that we can connect more with them. So there is the picture of Vishnu lying like that, and so forth. They have, that is a symbolism with a human face. But they are not human, they are not anthropomorphic exactly. There is an element of anthropomorphy in that. But you see, therefore, to show that they transcend the human limitations, Vishnu has been shown four hands. There are four hands. Any of you have four hands? No, human beings don't have four hands, but Vishnu is shown with four hands and so forth. So that is another set of deities that Hindus have. And the third, that is called Christ or incarnations of God, where that person is born like a human being, grows like a human being, goes through various experiences of a human being, dies like a human being, and that is just manifesting the divinity, showing us the path, that what is the goal and how to achieve that goal. That is Christ. That is the imitation. That is how the words are, you know. You must have heard the word Ramayana. Have you heard the word Ramayana? Ramayana is the story of Rama, but that Ramayana means, the Ayana means, this is the path that Rama went on. So that now you follow that path and you will become God. You will realize that you are divinity. You will realize thus the goal of life. I am the goal. I am the way. So imitation means that imitation of Christ is following in that. Thus it becomes understandable. Religion becomes practicable, understandable to us. If you remove from religion these human manifestations of divine, very little, just the kind of dry ideas of religion would be left, or only the folklore stories will be left. The practical religion will all be gone. Just imagine, you know, had these personalities not been there, Jesus not there, Prophet Muhammad not there, Buddha not there, Rama not there, Ramakrishna not there, how much religion would have been there in the world? Almost nothing, you see. So these divinities in human form, that is called Christ. And that imitation is what is spoken of here. Now this imitation, what it means, suppose you want to follow in the footsteps of somebody. See, we are all, you know, very logically thinking people. And we can easily think on these lines that suppose our Tom wants to, Thomas Kempis, he is also Thomas, you know, Tom. So it is, so Tom, he wants to follow somebody. Okay, I will follow. You go ahead, I will follow. Now, if somebody else is walking in some other direction, can Tom follow both of them? No. Suppose that person whom he is following is going to east. Can he follow also somebody who is going west? No. And that is where we falter in our following. We decide, I should follow in these divine footsteps, in the footsteps of Christ. But then something more attractive appears. And then we think, okay, let me do both. I will follow Christ as well as I will follow this other person. So we try to do both. This is the folly of human life, that because we are intelligent beings, we try to bring about compromise. That, okay, yeah, I will follow, you know, Christ for, you see, 1 hour a day. I will follow the other fellow for 1 hour a day. I will divide 1 hour for these 10 people that I will be following. And then I will, then remaining time I need rest and sleep and all that. So, it is, so what happens is we don't follow anybody. It is, in fact, the worst happens is that we become hypocrites. Keep the notion or tell others that I am a Christian. I am following Jesus Christ. That remains only in the lips, or maybe we deceive ourselves also while we are following all the paths for physical enjoyments and getting lot of money. There is a story of you know that that Kenya, that freedom fighter who later became therefore the president of Kenya, Jomo Kenyatta. So he wrote a book also that, and there is a very telling statement in that you know, when the Britishers came here, they had the Bible, we had the land. They told us, close the eyes and pray. And then when we opened the eyes, we found that we have the Bible and they have the land. So, that is how, you know, the whole following becomes very different. It is so imitation of Christ brings us on the proper, this discussion, proper criteria of following in the footsteps of God. And so one thing is, as you follow God, you, all your confusion goes away. And so he begins with this statement in the gospel. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness. Darkness symbolizes confusion. Oh, should I do this or should I do that? Should I go that? There is one pointedness. This is the goal and I am following that. No confusion there. It is such an important thing that we can see immediately in our life, that follow the Lord and the path will get lighted for you. It is the confusion, darkness of confusion will go away. See, this is something that you can all see in our lives. We are like those babies, the children. They take one toy at one time. In 10 minutes, they lose interest in that toy. Take up another one. They cry so much, bring the roof down, telling their parents, I want this, I want nothing else, I want this toy. It is, I went to Alaska last year and there is that Santa's, you know, that, North Pole is the name of the town where Santa is supposed to live. And then there are all these letters written to Santa. Santa, what I want. And these children, they write. For most part, I had been good last year. I had some trespasses, but still I hope you will be able to give. And I am not asking much this year. What I want is just an iPad. So it is, or a particular game, whatever it is. That is all that I am asking for. Now you get it, but then after a little while playing with it for a few minutes or maybe an hour or two or a couple of days, that is the stretch, then the fellow loses interest in that. So, that is, then now, did I really want it or I didn't want it? Everything else apart from God, everything else apart from God, we want it at one moment, do not want it next moment. Because that is not really the goal of our life. We like it at one time and then don't like it next time. It is so funny, but that is what causes confusion. That it is, should I do this or should I do that? If I do this, I like it. But then there is, due to the past experience, there is always a doubt. But how long am I going to like it? Because of the past experience we know, I like it, but will my liking last for a very long time till the end of my life? Because I am making a decision for my whole life. And my liking goes away. Then what am I going to do? Confusion. One lands in confusion. In almost everything, there is only one thing that won't change. And that we all want to realize God. That is the goal. That is the source of all bliss. It is therefore, I was telling the other day at Providence that God is our goal. But then you may question, that why, who is somebody else like Sri Ramakrishna to decide the goal for me? I will decide the goal for me. Goals can be different for different people. I will find my goal in life. It is, but the goal is not subjective like that. We all have really the same one goal that we have already decided, but we have forgotten. It crops up in our mind. You see, all of us really want happiness. All of us really want peace. That is the goal. Other things are because we think that I will get happiness from getting that toy. As you grow up, we say the children are interested in toys. As they grow up, the toys become different, that's all. They are like toys, that's all. They keep on changing the different toys, yeah. So, why do we get the toy? Toy in itself is not wanted. But you see that the toy is going to give me joy, and so we go for that toy. So what is my goal actually? Joy, isn't it? Happiness. That is the goal. Toy is not the goal. But because I thought that in that toy, I will get joy. And when I see that that toy is not giving me the desired joy, what do I do? I lose interest in that toy. And that happens not only with children. It happens with grown-ups too. It is, therefore, our goal in life is happiness. And where is the happiness? God is actually the summation of all happiness, all peace. All that we desire in life is summed up as God. There is no question as whether God exists or not. The Hindus have very, obvious reply for that. Where is the proof of God? Well, who asks the question, that is the proof of God. That person, that the self in everybody is God. So the beautiful name for God is Paramatman. The self is in all. That is God. So that is the storehouse of all happiness. So therefore, that is the automatic goal. It doesn't depend on whether you want it or you don't want it. You want it, whether you acknowledge or you don't acknowledge. You want that really. So that is why the first effect is in following the footsteps of Christ is you don't walk in darkness. You start, other things you lose interest. Here your attraction increases because you start getting more and more joy in that pursuit. See, it is like this, that suppose you are walking actually towards a very fragrant flower. Now, as you walk towards it, what will happen? The fragrance, well, you will get more and more fragrance, and that will, you know, increase your enthusiasm to go in that direction. Now, what you are walking towards, suppose, is a reflection of flower. So, what happens now? You are walking towards the reflection. Will the fragrance increase? It will decrease actually, because you are going away from the thing. And that is why you will lose interest. You will feel confused. If I really am walking towards this fragrant flower, the fragrance would have increased by this time. Why it's not? The reason is, you are not walking in the direction of the flower, but its reflection. So this is the difference, that when you walk in the footsteps of Christ, then, and this is assured by Christ, that they do not walk in darkness, they walk in clear light. You move on, guided by that attraction, that fragrance. So this is what happens. So Thomas A. Kempis proceeds further, says the Lord. These are the Christ's own words by which he exhorts us to imitate his life and his ways. If we truly desire to be enlightened and free of all blindness of heart, we all desire that, to be enlightened and to be free. We all, just like I told happiness, another criterion can be told freedom. We all want freedom. How do we get freedom? Walk in the footsteps of God, the Christ. And then you will see, you will feel more illumined and more emancipated. You will then break the bondage of this little I that we feel, the bondage of this ego. I am so and so. That is our bondage. That bondage will be gradually broken. So this is what is time? It is all 8:01. How much time do I speak? Another 2 minutes? 5 minutes?
As pleases yourself,
Mahar.
Everyone wants to hear what you have to say.
They want, but they have time constraints, you know. So, okay, I will not take much of your time. If you have any questions, you can ask now. We will proceed from here onwards tomorrow. But if today, I will stop my this class as such right now. But if any of you have questions, please come up and we can discuss those questions. And not only me, you know, he is asking questions. You can also join in giving answers, you know. So, come on, Tom.
When I heard the word imitation, I made a connection that a child learns to walk by imitating.
Yeah.
A child learns to speak
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
And that is what Christ was calling us to do.
To do.
To be like a child.
Yeah.
Suffer the little children to come.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
That's precisely what's being.
Exactly. Concerned. Yeah. And you are very correct there, that it is just as a child learns by imitating. It is. We have to see Jesus or the other incarnations of God, see how Sri Ramakrishna lived, and then try to do according to his teachings, according to his advice. There is one small difference that I would tell here, that many times the elders tell child, no, although I do that, you don't do it, because you are not really, you are not strong enough, you are not capable enough. So you do not what I tell, do what I tell you to do, instead of imitating me. And so it is like that, it is very important to see that difference. It is, I was learning that musical instrument, you know, Indian, those tabla, double that drums, you know. So I was learning to play it. And then my teacher told, put your fingers like this, put your this like this, and play exactly like this, and do. And then I started doing that, but I saw when that teacher was playing, he was doing all those different things. So I said, well, but you did like this. Said, that will come after some time, you know. And now don't try to do that. You are not now at that stage to do that imitation. You follow what I am telling you to do. Do not do what I am doing right now. Maybe it will take a few years. I never learned that to that extent to do all those things. But what it means is that, yes, follow the advice. Follow the teachings. You cannot always imitate those. And then don't imitate the wrong things. Like imitation of Sri Ramakrishna does not mean that I stopped going to school, because Sri Ramakrishna didn't go to school. But all those school dropouts don't become Sri Ramakrishnas, you see. And so that is not the way to imitate Sri Ramakrishna. It is, yeah. Or, okay, Sri Ramakrishna had grown that beard like that. So, okay, let me also do that. In California, Swami Vandanananda used to be there. Did you meet him, Shankara?
Yes.
Yeah, Swami Vandanananda. So he saw in Santa Barbara, he had gone to give lecture, and some celebrity entered the chapel in the lecture hall with almost no shirt and very funny looking clothes and all that. It is so as if he is coming from beach, you see. So, and Swami Vandanananda gently told him, you know, why just, put on some decent clothing. And then he points out to Sri Ramakrishna, look at his clothing. My clothing are better than pointing to Sri Ramakrishna's that picture. Am I not wearing, see his clothing, my clothing? And Vandanananda just uttered one sentence. Okay, the similarity ends there. The similarity ends there. So, it is, yeah, so don't imitate the wrong things. It is, the imitation has to be, you know, the cardinal points are to be imitated, to be absorbed, to be taken up, not the peripheral things. That need not be imitated. Like Sri Ramakrishna, while talking, used to stammer a bit. He was not that, you know, an orator. He used to stammer. So imitation of Sri Ramakrishna, does it mean that I also start stammering? No, that is not the imitation of Sri Ramakrishna. It is like that, you know, what you imitate. Jesus went, you know, in that temple and saw people exchanging, you know, money and doing business, and he took the stick and chased away all of them. Am I to imitate that? I am not capable of doing that. If I try to do that, I will be the casualty there, you see. So it is. Therefore, do the advice. Practice what the teachings are. That is the important thing. Good that you brought out this point. Yeah, even the children are told, you know, well, don't do the wrong things. We had one very good singer. And then that singer was wonderful singer, but used to smoke sometimes. Now his little son had come with him, about 4 or 5 years old. And then one of our Swamis asked him, it was a very nice incident, "Hey, you will also like to become a wonderful singer like your dad when you grow up?" And then that child, without any hesitation, said, "No! No! No, okay, what do you want to become when you grow up?" And he said, "I want to smoke." Because he sees the dad smoking, and when the dad tells, "No, no, no, you are not, you grow up later." Yeah, it is. Not that it is good to do that even when you are grown up, but certainly not right when you are a child. That is not the good point to imitate or to imbibe. In Upanishads, therefore, in Taittiriya Upanishad, we were talking about it, you know, Taittiriya Upanishad, there is a very nice parting advice for the student. The students, they learned, and now they are ready to, after the graduation ceremony, they are going to leave now. So there is a parting advice given by the teachers. And one of them, they're very beautiful things. One of them is, Yanyasmakagam sucharitani, tani sevitavyani, no itarani. That just look at the good things in us and take up those, not the other things. As human beings, we also have committed some mistakes. Some bad things are there in us. Don't take them up. Don't imitate those. Imitate only the good things. Yani asmakagam sucharitani. That our good deeds that you see, imitate those, follow those, take up those, no itarani, not the other things. So that is also a part in our learning, you know, that imitating. Thank you, Tom. You had a question?
Yeah. To add to that, add to what Tom's question is, that sometimes we make the mistakes to make it our own thing, you know. We evolve.
Yeah.
We want to evolve towards it. By experiencing and experimenting and all that stuff, make it your own thing. Where, you know, and then you, okay, this doesn't work. It really impresses on us when you stumble and fall and do things that have been told not to do. And you learn, okay, now I know for sure.
Yeah.
Because you want, so that maybe a divinity in you, or you think you know it all, is an ego or whatever. Anyway, the question I had was, you said that if you're following the footsteps of God, you're going towards the east, you can't follow another person who's going to the west. But my thing is, like, it's you start following 10 people. But what if you're not following the 10 people, you're following the value, like compassion or something, the value of the 10 people. So it's the same. It's like, I don't see the different religions, but something that I connect, whatever connects my soul.
Well, it is, therefore, your question is right, that it is, you follow the good things, those which take you towards your desired goal, they may be coming from various persons. But in that respect, those people are not different. They are kind of one. What I meant specifically was, therefore, those who are going in the opposite direction. You should cannot follow them all. It is very good if you are following Sri Ramakrishna, and also you are following Buddha, and also you are following Jesus, or if you are following Prophet Muhammad, nothing wrong. You know, you take the right thing from all of them and go ahead. You know, that is excellent. You are not following ten. Then there is another important aspect there, that is about meditation. Meditation is where you want to concentrate your mind.
I like that. Pointedness.
Pointedness. Now, you cannot do it on ten things.
Yes. Mm. Look, eventually, then after trying out all things, it takes time to understand yourself. From the first thing is finding myself. So after you go through all of them, experience, then you start getting the point. I mean, it's for me, my confusion is I am not one of those who knows exactly to start at this point. It would be wonderful if I did. From some people just follow right from the beginning because of the indoctrination or something. Oh, you follow this God and you do it. Our confusion comes because it's so open. Sometimes that brings its own confusion. And then I love the pointedness, but eventually I hope that I will select somebody which, like, I love Vedanta. I like a couple of other things. So gradually you start focusing, that becomes my journey. Okay, this is something that's more appealing to me, or this is attracting me more than that one. And then I love that. I love so much things about the other things, but this is what is attracting me, and that will be the strength.
Yeah, that requires, what you are saying is very good. One note of caution. Please permit me to tell it rather somewhat frankly, that it is this experimentation goes on unending. Mm-hmm. Mm. And thus, we spend whole life in experimenting rather than learning to focus. It requires lot of analyzing, self-introspection. Okay, I tried this. Done. I saw that this is not the right path at all. And then don't look at it again. What happens with many of us is that one keeps on just experimenting with the same thing over and over again. Although we had one bitter experience, we don't learn from it. I tell that funny joke many times. Here also I had told that if a man saw his friend's ear is black, burn mark, asked, "Well, what happened to your ear here?" You know, in the early morning, I was not still fully awake, and the phone rang, and then I went to pick it up, and instead of taking up the phone, I took the hot iron and put it there. Yeah. My goodness, but why your other ear also is black? You know that fool called again. So, our experimenting many times becomes like this.
Yes.
Mm, so, one must be aware of that. Beware of that.
Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Okay, then.
All right,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we
are pleased to come tomorrow evening for the conclusion of the Swami's talk on consciousness and all of the other things that he brings to these discussions that illumine what he's talking about. It's interesting to see how such a mind works when they begin to talk about a particular subject and bring so many aspects so that we see very clearly what it is they're talking about. Thank you. So, we'll see you again tomorrow.